With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to the Box Set Pod. Howell and Jamie here. Nice to have you with us. Today, it's the day we've all been waiting for so long. It's the day that I get to officially talk about Chuck without being told off about it. So the last couple of episodes, you may know, we have been trying out this, it's almost like a courtroom. We get one person who hasn't seen something and has been put off by it in the past to watch one episode of something, and then that person has to come on and tell us what they thought based on the first episode. The rest of us have to try and persuade you to carry on. Now, slightly different this week because we're going to have two people who've only gone as far as the first episode, unless, of course, Jamie has watched some this week.
No.
Where have you gone?
Sorry, I was just plugging my phone in. I was running out of battery.
I listen back to this podcast. It sounds like you like just go for walks to the shop halfway through. How's life? So we'll get on to that in a moment. We're going to be joined by Mel, who has taken over the world of Chuck in her own way. I know she's been on this podcast before. You're going to hear a slightly different type of interaction with her this week based on that courtroom thing I was just talking about. But Jamie's got an actual job in his life. How has this affected your ability to watch TV?
Excellent question, Howell. Let me take that for you. Yeah, it's been hell because I've been in a hotel in London all week and I have not watched anything. In fact, literally, I only got back from London today and I've just watched the finale of Downton Abbey. Tears fell down my face.
No, they didn't.
No, they didn't, but my wife cried, and it was very emotional, really. Wow. I mean, it's a good ending. They are still doing a Christmas special, but it was really very moving, very moving.
Wow. Well, how exciting.
That's all I've watched, though.
Yeah?
But yeah, it's really interrupted my my shiz.
Yeah. Can you hear that tinging noise?
No.
You hear that? No, that's all right then. There's a thing in my ears, but it's not interrupting. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. I have finished 24. Yes.
Oh my word.
9 series, although that's technically 8.5 because the last series is only 12 episodes. 9 series of 24 since September the 1st, which if I just get my calculator out right
now. That is impressive. Actually.
Amounts to what? 24 times 8 plus 12. 204 hours of Kiefer Sutherland in 2.5 months. 204 hours, and I'm on season 3 of The Good Wife. And I've even started Arrested Development finally because I'm late to that part.
Yeah. Oh, how are you going to bloody love it's after? Oh, it gets better and better until the last series, which went a bit off the boil. But
did it? So 24 to wrap up. What an experience! I take back anything I ever said about it. It's brilliant. I absolutely love it. I can't believe Jack Bauer. I can't believe the way they ended it. Did you see the last series, Jamie? The one they did last year with the
Rolls?
Oh my god! But so, did you watch every other series?
No, I mean I only watched like the first series.
Oh
really.
Man, you gotta get going on it! Ah, you gotta get going! It's amazing. It gets better with age, and it stays about as ridiculous, but it does get better with age, and you've got to admire Kiefer Sutherland. He really is a phenomenal person. But in the final series, the one that they did last year, which is 24... what's it called? Oh, God.
I don't even know.
It was like Live Another Day, I think it was called. 24, Live Another Day. Although it should have been called 24, Live Another Half Day, because it was only 12 hours. He teams up with Yvonne Strahovski from Chuck.
Howell's lady.
She's like the main part with him, and the sensible thing to do now would be a spin-off with her. Apparently they're not going to do that. Apparently she might cameo, but it sounds like it's because she's busy with Astronauts Wives Club rather than that she doesn't want to do it. But she's brilliant. Like, I honestly, we'll come back onto her later, I'm sure. But I need to make a note. Come on to Yvonne.
On Yvonne.
Yeah, written that down.
Yeah, excellent. Does Bauer get her in a chokehold?
Absolutely not. No, they're working together. It's brilliant, and it's a shame that he won't do any more because they really do make a great team. It's brilliant. Good wife observations. Wow. Firstly, I'd like to apologise to anybody called Narinda because...
Yeah. It's Kalinda.
We all talked about Narinda on last week's podcast, I think. And it's not. It's Kalinda. So there we go.
We were close. We were one bloody letter in it. I mean, who'd have funked it?
You ask me to name any character in The Good Wife apart from Alicia, the main part. I wouldn't be able to tell you their names. About Will. Alicia and Will. Hello. Can you hear me?
You cut out a bit then.
Well, I believe we're all fine. It's just you that's the problem, wandering around your shop. Good Wife. It's not got any style at all, The Good Wife. You know when, like, they pick a costume or when they have to make a little fake promotional video?
Yeah, you're right about that.
It's so bad. It's like my dad has made it, those things.
That's what makes it a bit cringy at times. But it is still very good, though, isn't it?
Number two, what the frick is Chris Noth still being called special guest appearance by on every
credits? That's a very good point.
He's a main character. It's a ridiculous thing that must have been.
I had wondered that.
Yeah, stupid. Now Michael J. Fox makes an appearance in it. This has made me very
happy. Brilliant.
He's so good.
He comes in it quite a lot because he's a good character, and they come back to him and more.
I'm going to write that. Come on to Michael J. Fox. I'm going to bring that up with everybody else when they join us in a moment. But basically, I'm on season three and it's getting really good. So, news. Do it.
Let's do a bit of news. We've got the emails and we've got the top 10 to do. So, quick bits of news. First of all, what's that, Howell?
That is the 70s lounge version of the Star Trek.
Well done, Howell. 5 points to the Evanses. So, yes, CBS is bringing back Star Trek, heading to TV 2017, back to the small screen since it was cancelled in 2005, Star Trek Enterprise, which had Scott Bakula, a.k.a. Sam Beckett from Quantum Leap.
Engaged. In that. Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah. That was cancelled. It's coming back. The big thing is about that is the new show is going to be trying to create a similar style to the original classic series from 1966. A lot of Trekkies are cock-a-hoo. So that's really good news.
Excellent.
As I mentioned, Downton Abbey was the finale was on Sunday, but of course it is back for a Christmas special. Anyway, Sunday night, 38.9% share of the Sunday night audience to Downton Abbey. It was huge. Over 9 million people watched it. It might have dropped off a little bit over the years, Downton, but I think it ended extremely well. And one more massive piece of news. Are you ready, Howell?
Yeah.
It's back. Alan Partridge, the TV show Mid-Morning Matters, will be returning on Sky Atlantic next year on the 8th of February.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Yeah. Brilliant. I would like to know an American's opinion on Alan Partridge, actually, because just about whether the humour, translates and stuff, I don't know. So
it'd be interesting.
I will write that down. So come on to Alan Partridge. So I've got to come on to Yvonne Strahovski, Michael J. Fox, and Alan Partridge later. I'll try and do that.
You're very note heavy today, Howell.
I am.
It's like you're trying harder or something. It's weird.
I know. My battery's nearly gone. Well, I listened back to the podcast with my sister in the car, and I just thought I sounded very low energy. So what I'm trying to do is just, I record this in a very small room that's a bit echoey.
Yeah.
And I get a bit embarrassed thinking the neighbours can hear me talking to myself. I don't care.
Fuck 'em. last thing I want to mention to you, there's a trailer I'm going to put it on the website. I can't quite get hold of the exact details yet, but the Better Call Saul Season 2 trailer is available. And it's certainly in the US it has been. It should be over here soon. Looks very enticing.
Great. Great.
Yeah, Better Call Saul, back next year. All right, let's move on to the emails.
Emails or chart, but yeah, Jack emailed. Ricky emailed, sorry. Yeah, Ricky. Have you guys been watching Leftovers, is what Ricky said. Season 2 is on Sky Atlantic at the moment. I love it. Not too cheery, so perhaps not for Howell. I love this reputation I've got now, thanks to you. I've not been able to handle anything that isn't Cinderella, although that's got some dark bits in it. No, I haven't seen it. Jamie, have you seen Leftovers?
Yeah, I have. I've got some points I'd like to make, actually, to Rick.
Stop wandering around. What are you...
I'm kind of wandering between my my phone, which is plugged in somewhere. And anyway, let me get to Leftovers. Yeah, I watched season one, and I am going to watch season two. But season one of Leftovers is incredibly miserable. Like, it's very, very sad. The concept of the show is these people just randomly disappear. No one knows why, and it leaves society sort of bereft, unable to properly grieve. Yeah. And this is the experience, and it's very sad, and it's very morose.
Yeah.
It does have some really good bits, but I do have to admit it was hard to enjoy. I am hearing that season two, like Rick said, season two is brilliant. I'm hearing that Leftovers is really good. So, yes, I will check that out, Rick.
Let's see if Matt's watched it, because he's joining us. We haven't got Mel yet, but Matt's there, I think. Hi, Matt.
Yes, good evening, guys.
Good evening,
hey!
Matthew. Good evening, London. Cool. We're going to be heading to Texas, I think, shortly. I can't remember where Mel's from. I think it's Texas.
No way.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
London, Manchester and Texas. There's a line.
So what a podcast.
Matt, have you seen Leftovers? Sorry, did you answer that just then?
I
think you
might have done. No, I don't know what it is.
I don't really either. Jamie, can you give me a one sentence about what it is? Or have you just done that?
Very simply, it's on HBO. It's set in a world where people have disappeared and no one knows why.
Ooh.
And it's miserable. But it's interesting as well.
Oh, my God. Well, lots of people have disappeared.
Yeah, millions of people. There's like 5 million. No one knows why. No one knows if they're the good people and they've gone to heaven, or they're the bad people and they've gone to hell, or they've just been abducted by some weird-looking alien shit. They don't know, and it's really fucking with their heads. So it's worth a watch for that reason.
Or it could be an elaborate ploy of some kind, like a really long game of hide-and-seek.
Great magic trick. Ricky on the email says the opening sequence to the second series was bizarre but brilliant. I think it's amazing. You need to watch it. Also, I'm really enjoying The Affair at the moment. Now, I know Matt hasn't watched The Affair, so that was one of his choices for this week. I love the way, because we mentioned this, didn't we, about the sort of morality of it and whether you can hang on to it. Well, Ricky loves it for that reason. I love the way it shows events from different people's perspectives, and it does get you questioning what the moral or message of the story is when the main characters have caused so much hurt for their friends and family. Are they the ones you're supposed to be cheering for, or maybe
it's
not?
It's a really good point. It's really good, because you're looking at it from different perspectives. Mm. You see it when you see it from one person's perspective, it looks like someone is in the wrong and doing something terrible and being a knob.
Yeah.
But then when you see it from their perspective, you're like, hold on a minute, they were going through this and this was in their head and they were perceiving things in this way. So I do agree with that comment.
Yeah, I'd side against the protagonist mostly, but then not so much her. Like, she had something terrible happen to her. He's just a bit of a dick. Also, I don't think you guys have mentioned either The Office or Curb Your Enthusiasm. We've certainly mentioned Curb at some point, I think, but...
Surely.
The Office. What do you think? Comedy genius or not your cup of tea? I think both are fantastic, and I can't wait for the final series of Peep Show. Thoughts on...
Which one are we talking about with The Office?
I think we'd be talking about both, I would imagine. I take your question that you're not a Gervais cheerleader.
Oh, the opposite. I think the British Office is probably one of, if not my favourite comedy series ever. I think it's incredibly special. And bold, I really dislike statement. The American office.
Oh, bold statement from London that I know is going to go down badly in Manchester. Let's go there now to Jamie Atherton.
Hello, but yes, I actually, you know, I can't disagree. The UK version is brilliant. Like, it's undeniable. But I think the American one is even, in my opinion, it's even better. Not mainly for, like, it's not even the character of the Ricky Gervais character, the David Brenker. It's like the other supporting players are even better. Like Dwight, who is the main, like, knob in the office, is brilliant. He's an amazing character. Dwight Schrute is just
well, I suppose
he's my least favorite thing about the American Office.
This is Matt, who does a football podcast. Let's bear that in mind. Let's go back to Matt now, as we ask him, how much of the American Office have you watched, Matthew?
I watched at least the first three episodes of the first series. Because basically...
We didn't do the four. Where you're not entitled to an opinion. Go on.
Because I was hating it so much by that point that I couldn't carry on watching. And my friend said, no, go to another series and try another episode. So I did that. I watched about four or five episodes of maybe the third or fourth series. I can't remember. I picked it up at a random point. And I really tried... I've tried hard to like this show, and I cannot.
I'm not afraid that I think it's terrible.
I just don't think it's
just noise. Just noise coming from London. Just subjective justification that is not allowed in this court because you haven't watched the first four episodes. And I'm sorry, Matt. It's not that I don't believe what you're saying, or it's not even that I'm saying you're wrong. It's just that in this court, you aren't entitled to an opinion if you haven't watched four. Rules are rules. And the good wife is teaching me one thing, and that is, you know, it doesn't really matter about who's right or wrong. It's who plays by the rules. And you
but with the American Office, I might as well just go and watch the British Office and do it all in American accents and remove any subtlety from it. Particularly with the first series, it basically follows the same story, doesn't it?
I haven't watched the American Office. I don't know. But I would say, from what I've seen of both, and I've watched all of the original Office, is that I would question how subtle the original Office actually is. I think at the time it was kind of a very new sort of style. But I think Ricky Gervais signals absolutely everything, you know, so massively that there isn't that much room for subtlety. Whereas with Steve Carell, when I've seen him playing it, I kind of like the fact that Steve Carell is, what am I going to say? I believe that Ricky Gervais is playing himself. Steve Carell's playing a character, so I quite admire that.
I completely agree with you about Gervais, but I don't think I think, as you said about the American, I don't think he is the best thing about the British Office. I think the Tim and Gareth relationship is far more interesting than the Dwight and I can't remember. Is he called Tim in the American Office? He's not, is he?
Andy. Oh, no, not Andy.
Andy, yeah.
You're right, Andy, isn't it?
I've forgotten his
name. I thought it was Andy. Yeah.
Whoever it is, the tall, handsome chap.
Jim,
there you go. I don't think that one works as well as Tim and Gareth does. Tim and Gareth is beautiful and brilliant. It's really amazing.
I agree with some of that.
Have either of you watched any of the Detectorists, the Mackenzie Crook one?
No.
So this is a BBC one. I haven't watched it either. My family have, and they keep banging on about it. So none of us have watched that. But I think the point that we've all learned, the real winner here, is Ricky, who emailed us and started this debate. So thanks, Ricky. We've not even done this week's chart. So this week's chart, as provided by our chart department, Ben, is the algorithm department, sorry. Of course, this chart is compiled. It's the only, as far as we know, chart that is compiled by both legal and illegal downloads, depending on which country you're in. A lot like The Affair, it depends on your perspective. At number 10, Homeland. Doing well. Number 9, Better Call Saul. So why is Better Call Saul up there? What's going on?
Maybe it's because the trailer for season 2's come out and it's started to build up a bit of enthusiasm for season 2 coming out next year. Yeah. I don't know.
I wonder how much of a push there are when there's talk of a second series. You know, what sort of a push there is for people who go, I haven't watched the first one yet, and everyone's gone on about it and then catch up. Number 8 is Vampire Diaries. Anybody watched that?
No.
Descendants?
No.
That's not a spin-off of the terrible George Clooney movie, is it?
Well, I wonder. Whoa, hang on a minute, Mr. Cynical London Face. The Descendants is a great film starring George Clooney.
God.
I loved it. And
what a waste of time that film is.
What?
My God.
What?
It's so boring.
Have you ever been to Hawaii, Matt?
No, and right. It didn't make me want to go. It's the first time I've seen Hawaii in a light that made me, I don't want to be there. It looks terribly dull.
Supergirl. Is it number 6? What, Jamie?
Yeah. Just back to Descendants. I had no idea what it was. It turns out it's a TV movie, a sort of animated TV movie about a kingdom with the benevolent teenage son of King Adam. I don't know. So it's like a fantasy cartoon by the looks of it.
All right, avoid that. Supergirl is at number 6. I haven't watched episode 2. Episode 1 was just mind-blowingly thin on the ground, just bizarre. Vikings is at 5. Big Bang Theory is at number 4. Downton is down at number 3 despite having its final episode. And Game of Thrones is at 2 and Walking Dead is at 1. Game of Thrones and Walking Dead, the two things we've talked about the last couple of weeks. Matt joined us talking about Walking Dead. He missed last week's... he didn't miss it. I mean, he's not a permanent fixture. We're not paying him. But he wasn't present on the Game of Thrones debate last week. And Matt emailed furious. No, he couldn't even describe why he was furious. He just knew he was furious. Matt, I'll give you 1.5 minutes to give us your opinions on what was said last week. On your marks, get set, go.
It wasn't that I was furious. It was just that there were certain points where I disagreed, and I can't remember what they were now. But basically, I watched 4 and a bit series of Game of Thrones, and the moment where I stopped watching it was the eyes. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't even that was just like so disgusting that made me turn off. It just at that point I was like, what's the point now? Mm. What's going on? I should say as well, I've read the books and I couldn't justify watching the story anymore because it gets really mired and boring, I think. And I was fed up with the acting. And
the books get boring. Sorry to interrupt.
The books get terribly dull. And I mean, the series, in fact, it's one of the better book adaptations I've ever seen because it's done a really good job of filleting out a lot of really dull writing. But
you
I just
30 seconds
I just feel,
to tell us, what was the most annoying point made last week?
Oh, God, I wish I could remember. damn it. You said someone was really good that wasn't. Because my problem is that everyone seems to really like the acting in Game
Peter
of Thrones.
Peter Dinklage.
Whereas I think, by and large, it is terrible. Peter Dinklage is very good in it.
Oh, yeah, we said it's Cersei all Lannister. Good acting. Oh, what? Cersei's brilliant.
She's not. She's freaking terrible.
Cynical. That's 1 minute 30.
She can't
Thank
do anything.
Thank you for your opinions. do you know what? Felt the same way at the same point that you did. The difference between us is that I haven't read the bloody books. And there's me watching it going, look, I know every trick they're pulling here to stretch out this soap opera, but I know there's some books, which means that at least I can trust that it's going somewhere. And now, someone who's read the frickin' books has said to me, where it's going is dull. So what's the point?
I don't want to deter anyone from watching it because ultimately I was enjoying it for quite a while, but it's just that I don't know. He's really quite a poor writer, George R. R. Martin, and you touched on he is his writing is really the reason the books are so liked is because they're so bloody easy to read. You can just churn through them because most of it's just... It's just connector words. He's got so little. It's like reading a really epic kids' book.
Now look, there are points here bigger than we can deal with right now. But you're talking about what defines good. Is popular good, or is you have just said that George R. R. Martin is a terrible writer. Now, in the case of 50 Shades of Grey, I have to agree, and maybe this is the same case. I don't know.
No, you guys made a very good point last week, which is what I think about the books, is that the achievement should be recognised in terms of the world he's created, because that is brilliant. Like, yeah. the sheer level of detail and history and... you really feel like you know Westeros, and it's incredibly grand and sweeping, and that's amazing. He's done a really, really good job in that sense. But when you read the books, they are 20% lists of what people are eating. I'm not joking. I got to the point where I would skip if I realized someone was about to have a meal. I would skip forward a couple of pages. Because you just have to listen to him list all the stuff that's on the table.
Really?
It's unbearable. There will be some cool stuff happening with Arya's got a cool storyline coming up now.
Oh, right. Okay.
But other than that, it's really boring. There's so much dull political nonsense over in the desert bit with... Daenerys.
Oh, I quite like that. I don't know. I think, Matt, you're just a simpleton and you can't understand.
I'll be the first to admit that. Let's talk about football.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, good point. No. I'm glad that we got your opinions on that. It was a shame to not have them last week. We're going to get Mel on. She is currently. I'll tell you the conversation with Mel so far. She is waiting for... Her computer's decided to do some Windows updates. Just never have a Windows computer, just use Macs.
Poor thing, she's got a Windows PC.
And she lives in Texas. And, and so she's waiting. She's on 13 of 13 things that have to be updated for her to actually connect with us. I've just emailed offering to actually call her. I don't know how long my Skype credit will last, but we could call her actual mobile. I'll tell you what we don't need from Mel, though. Bit of feedback on the last couple of weeks in our new courtroom setup is this. One thing we're missing is a little brief description of what the actual thing is that we're talking about. You know, for someone who's never watched it, none of us have actually done a little blurb setting up the world of Walking Dead or Game of Thrones. And that person should be the person who's just watched the first episode, I think, so that they're not giving away too much. So, Matt, can you give us a non-opinionated, just a little synopsis, little blurb of Chuck for anybody who hasn't seen the first episode? What is the premise?
Okay, so Chuck is a sort of 20-something, fairly nerdy American. He's from Los Angeles, and he works at a sort of generic, large electrical appliance store, sort of solving problems with people's computers and camcorders and that sort of thing. He is socially awkward. We first meet him at his own birthday party, which his sister has thrown for him in order to try and hook him up with a woman. He struggles, fails, and you see his life. You know, he's this kind of nerdy guy who doesn't have an awful lot going for him. He's sort of just pootling along, working at a dead-end job. Then suddenly, excitement ignites in his world when his ex-university buddy, who actually turned out to be working for the CIA, goes rogue, hacks into a secret government computer that contains all of the most top secret information from the last 50 years, and somehow emails that to Chuck and downloads it into his brain. Cue a massive sort of governmental institution, NSA versus CIA fight for the information and to protect the information from, you know, all the bad terrorists and those jackasses.
Very good. You've made me want to watch it. Please welcome back to the Box Set Pod now, Mel from Chuck.tv. Mel, how beautiful to have you back with us.
Why, thank you. It's lovely to be back.
How's, where do you live? Texas?
Kansas.
Kansas. Kansas.
A little bit north of Texas.
Yeah. What's going on in Kansas?
It's a gorgeous day. We just celebrated Veterans Day yesterday. I live in the founding city of Veterans Day, so it's a big deal here.
Yeah. And your dad does, he like arranges the whole thing or something, doesn't he?
My dad's very involved. He was in Vietnam, and my grandfather fought in World War II, and so our family is very involved. I actually drove in the parade yesterday, drove a 92-year-old veteran down the street very, very, very slowly in a convertible. So,
wow, that's some prized goods you've got to look after there.
And I know, yeah.
Wow, Mel, when are you signing up and going to war?
They won't take me, alas. Oh. Same reason I can't be an astronaut. I'm deaf in one ear, so.
Oh, really? Really?
Yeah.
And would you have done it? Do you think you'd be a military gal if not for the ear?
I would probably, because I think that's the easiest way to get into the astronaut program. Wow. The space program here in the States, and I have always wanted to be an astronaut. It was a very, very sad day when I learned that I would not be eligible because of the hearing loss, so.
Wow.
Yep, I would have. Yep.
Well, that's all we've got time for today, everyone. Thank you, Mel. No, what a story. That's amazing. And presumably now, because of Yvonne Strahovski, you are also a super fan of Astronauts Wives Club.
Of course. I had read the book, and the show was fantastic. That's an era in history that I have studied extensively and have always been slightly sad that I wasn't alive during that time. But Yvonne did a fantastic job on that.
I haven't seen it. Has anybody watched that yet?
No.
No, sorry.
There we go. Well, there's another one we need to do. So, yes. Okay, Mel.
It's short.
I'm warning you now, things can get brutal in the court of the Box Set Pod. Okay?
All right.
Okay, so let's go. Let's go over to Matt. Matt, give us your feelings of the first episode of Chuck.
Well, unfortunately, my feelings aren't particularly strong either way. Oh. I'd been aware of Chuck, and I'd kind of not bothered to watch it because I don't have as much time as I used to watch TV shows, and so I have to kind of pick and choose. Mm. And I actually, I don't know if this is cheating, but I watched the first two episodes.
Oh,
which I suppose is a positive sign.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I can imagine myself continuing with it, but I don't know whether I will, because where I am at the moment is like, how are they going to keep spinning this out?
Oh, they do. and for like 300 episodes a series as well.
Well, that's, I looked it up and I was like, oh my God, there's five series of this. How have they done that? And it's a really weird one in terms of like how it handles the kind of government aspects of
science.
It, like this,
yeah.
They just pit the CIA and the NSA against each other, like two kind of kids squabbling in a playground. And I don't know whether that has any basis in fact. But
let's go to Mel, who can talk on behalf of both of those organizations. Mel.
Yes, I am an official spokesperson for both the NSA and the CIA, and I can say without a doubt that it often resembles a playground.
There you go.
Yes, there's a lot of posturing and bickering and reluctant working together. So I think it's interesting to hear the perspective of someone who's not from the U.S. on that aspect in particular, because over here that was not even an issue. Like nobody even blinked.
Really? Really?
Yeah. It wasn't that they didn't like each other. It was the fact that the NSA was so willing to just kill CIA people, which... I don't know. That
destruct
me
as... Yeah.
To protect.
Right. Well, no, it didn't even matter. There wasn't the guy, the main NSA guy, I can't think of his name now, Casey.
Yeah.
Casey.
He was just like, I think he said at the beginning of the first episode, another dead CIA agent, which is fine by me. And it's like, really? I didn't realize there was such a level of infighting where they actually attack each other.
Well, I think also, though, Matt, you're not into the humor yet. And you're not into that character right. yet. I think Mel will agree. If you, it's really nice to hear someone who doesn't know it that well. But Casey, the character, is supposed to be as kind of uber right wing as you could go, I suppose, isn't he, Mel?
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. You'll see later on when we finally get to see the interior of Casey's apartment. He has a little shrine built for President Reagan.
Okay.
So it's played for laughs. It is played for laughs, but that is his character. He is quite right wing and, you know, very, oh gosh, just so very, takes himself so very seriously.
And loves guns. At the end of the loves first, guns and killing
yes,
people.
Yes, loves guns. Oh, you'll see that too. He's named his gun. And there's a little semi-pornographic moment later in the first series where ooh. You see just how much how loving he is with his guns. So there's wow. yeah there's some humor being to come.
Now can
Casey.
I yeah can I just take the conversation we've just had and use that as an example for why I think, if you boil that down, that is why I think everyone should stick with Chuck, because you're right. How on earth can they spin this out? Well, in a way, they don't need to, because that isn't what they're spinning out. The setup is the setup. That is the situation comedy of it. What will spin out and what will be explored are the characters. That's the point of Chuck, I think.
Exactly. Yeah. It is that, and that's one of the reasons it was so difficult to market and advertise the show here, is because U.S. audiences at that point were more used to the procedural and it being about, you know, the case of the week and less about the characters and the character development. And Chuck was about character development.
Mm.
So that's, you know, that's what you're going to remember once you finish watching every episode. You're going to remember the characters more than the plot, I think.
Jamie, we've talked before about, and this is an unusual setup, Mel, because Jamie still hasn't watched more than one episode of Chuck.
I cannot believe that last time I was on, I did not convince you to continue.
Like,
I have failed.
9 months or something.
Very persuasive, Mel. Well done.
Failed the city. Oh my gosh.
But Jamie, we've talked about Mad Men, and you believe that people will, you know, Mad Men will sort of gather traction the further we get from it. I think you've said that in the past, haven't you? That looking back, Mad Men will become more and more popular. And that's,
sounds like something new.
Mad Men is a similar thing in that sense, isn't it? It's not about what happens every week. It's about character exploration. And maybe that's why Chuck has got this... there seem to be more and more followers all the time, and people like me coming to it 10 years late, and people like Mel who actively helped save it and bring it back when they tried to kill it off, when the studio killed it off. It was Mel and her fans that Mel's collection of fans who managed to bring it back, and it's because of that, I think. And I think Chuck will snowball, but it is so hard, Mel. It's so hard to persuade somebody why they should stick with it. Jamie, have you got anything to bring to the party in terms of why you haven't watched more than one episode in 6 months?
Well, it's interesting what Matt said, because when you asked Matt what he thought of it, what his opinion was after one episode, Matt immediately said, I don't really have an opinion yet. Mm. And I think that's the problem with the start of Chuck anyway. It might get great, but it, like, initially it just feels like a generic American TV show, you know, just a very standard sort of quite funny in places, but slightly low budget, but a prime, but something you'd find on like a CBS or ABC, and it just a generic kind of show. And it doesn't really elicit a feeling or a response or much of an opinion. That's why I didn't feel like compelled to carry on watching it.
I feel a little bit like I did after the start of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Hmm.
Yes, yes, that is
it's,
a very
it's that
good...
kind of thing. Mm. And I mean, there's not much that I didn't like about it, because I actually thought some of the jokes were quite nice. I like the character of Morgan, but it felt like it borrowed very heavily from 40-Year-Old Virgin in terms of that setup. Mm. And
that's just because Matt hasn't seen the inside of an American hardware store other than in 40-Year-Old Virgin and Chalk.
That's probably true. But the one thing I didn't like about it, and this is quite a sort of moral high ground position to take, is how, is it Yvonne Strahovski?
Strahovski,
is used... In the first couple of episodes, certainly, there's an awful lot of semi-nudity action.
Oh, wow, it's disgraceful. Yes. Mel, let's go to Mel about the use of Yvonne Strahovski's exquisite female form in Chuck.
I actually want to go back to the comment about it being...
Generic
reading kind
American.
Of like a generic show.
Yeah, because yeah, because how do you feel about the word American being used as a derogatory term, Mel?
Oh, I'm used to it. I'm from here. And I don't always disagree. So, no, it's interesting that you say that, because when it premiered in 2007, it was such a unique show. Oh, it was not like anything that was on TV at the time. And it's, in, you know, here we are 8 years later, and the television landscape has changed so much. I would put forth to the court that Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. possibly could not exist without Chuck as a precursor.
Wow. So tell us, what was the landscape then? How was it so different?
Oh, it was incredibly generic. Like I said, it was almost all procedurals. We just didn't do, I mean, some of the cable, Chuck aired on NBC, which is one of the big at the time, big four networks. Yeah. And so it was, you know, it did have to be tailored to a free view audience. Versus a pay, you know, when you pay for cable or premium channels. So, but this was pre Game of Thrones. This is pre Walking Dead. I think Mad Men was just starting I think Mad Men had already begun, because it didn't launch in 2005, 2006. Okay. So, but it was, you know, when Mad Men launched, it was this huge deal because, again, it was this character driven show. Mm. And then here comes Chuck, and it's also this character driven show, but it's on a major network. Its first season ratings versus Mad Men's were light years apart, because Mad Men was on a pay cable channel and Chuck was on a freebie channel. So, it just by default had a larger potential audience. Mm. So it was, but yeah, it was, we're talking, I think there were like four CSIs on at the time. You know, there were three or four Law and Orders. This was not a character driven environment like it is today.
I think what Matt and Jamie are referring to as well, though, is that it has a look which is different from the way things are shot in Britain, because Britain looks very different from America, partly because
does
of that.
It now? Gosh, I did not know.
but there is a there's a feel to there's a sheen to it that could pass in our eyes. It could be Saved by the Bell, or you know what I mean. There's kind
it's
of
it's a very glossily produced, especially the pilot that was directed by McGee, who you know of course did the instant classic
Charlie's Angels.
Yeah, so we're coming from that, you know, they're going for a very action pop look and feel. Yeah. As the series progresses, it does become darker. But, you know, at the time, as far as the look of it, though, it does. Yeah, we kind of move out of the buy more spoiler alert, you know, it's not quite as important. So it does become a little darker and a little more monochromatic. But again, at the time, we're talking solving crimes in the dark on every channel is what was going on. So here we have this bright and very glossily produced show. So, but again, that was 8 years ago, and you're coming at it from the perspective of a world where we do have these very character driven shows, and that's kind of the norm. Yeah. So I get what you're saying.
Go on, sorry.
it's interesting to hear that perspective.
I just derailed everything with interjecting. Sorry. No, what I was going to say is that I think that there were other cable series out at the time, shows like 30 Rock and Community, which don't go to the 45-hour thing, and they don't have quite the high concept feel, but they do the comedy better, I think.
Yeah.
And the and the character development better as well. Mm-hmm. That's very unfair to say after two episodes. Actually, that's very
No. Hey, don't start being polite in the court. Mel, what were you going to say back to that?
Community actually started after Chuck, and I think 30 Rock premiered the same year or the year after.
Is it really? My time frame is out.
Yeah,
they're contemporaries, but they're not. I think Chuck did come first. Yeah. But, you know, but that's, again, that's a historical perspective versus a contemporary perspective. So,
but I also think
just something interesting to note.
I also think we're comparing apples and pears slightly with those things. Because the Chuck, if you ignore all of the comic book things that we've had, if you think instead in terms of a classic comedy, so classic comedy characters where you've got in a comic book sense, and I want to bring this back to the comment about Yvonne Strahovski, because Matt's right, from a feminist perspective, you could look at this and say the two main female characters, one is a housewife character who's kept in the dark for the majority of it, and the other is the sexy CIA lady, and she has to have her tits and ass out on every possible opportunity. But that's kind of the comic book world we're in the same way that Casey will be the gun nut and Chuck will be the non-achiever and, you know, all of that. But Mel, have you heard similar feminist comments made before about Chuck?
First of all, I think that while those character descriptions are somewhat accurate as far as the beginning of the series, they're not by the end of the series.
No,
so
agree.
I just want to put that out there.
Yeah.
And I'm using series in the American term as in the entire run.
Yeah.
Not.
No, I agree.
Season.
Yeah.
Just making that clear for our listeners. but you know, it was interesting during the time the show was on, there were the occasional grumblings about Yvonne having to wear these, you know, being scantily clad and having, I mean, if you think this is, Matt, if you think you've seen something yet, you have not. Let me just say that.
Wait for the cat suits.
Yes. Well, and the bikinis and you ain't seen nothing yet. but again, this was primetime network television, so it doesn't go, we're not talking Game of Thrones levels here, but it was interesting because there would be occasional comments about how that was disrespectful and why did she let them do that? Why were they forcing Yvonne? Why were they forcing, you know, why was she letting them force her to wear these costumes? And she has said she doesn't care. She has no problem with it.
I know. Sure that's true.
It's all right.
Yeah, she's from Australia. She's not,
she's a dirty,
you know, nudity doesn't bother
dirty
her.
Australian.
Yeah, no. She has just said, you know, nudity doesn't bother me, and she's was rather confused about why fans were complaining. But it was also interesting to note that every single one of those comments came from male fans. I never once heard it from a female fan.
Matthew.
And as a female viewer, I was never bothered by it.
No, because
it always seemed contextual. And her character is such a strong and yet complicated and fairly well developed.
Did you just say it always seemed contextual?
it did seem contextual.
Yeah, in the world of Chuck, it is.
Whether it was,
if she's working in a sausage shop and she has to,
And she's bending over and flashing her skirt while she's fighting. Yeah,
exactly.
But the thing is that it's done with a wink and a nod, like Sarah's in on it.
Totally.
She knows. She knows what she's doing, and it's a weapon in her arsenal.
Think of it like this, Matt. Mel, have you ever seen a low low?
No.
Of course.
Should I?
No. Well, yeah, it's amazing. I mean, it's the best farce ever put on TV. But it's that kind of world. It's a farce world, and it's this female character is in the position of power. The same thing happened on my couch, that if there was a problem with the outfits, it was me going, oh, that's a bit embarrassing that she's been made to... This is a bit blatant. But it is totally, like Mel said, it's totally knowing that that's what they're doing. And I think the more you realise that this is an ensemble of people having an amazing time, who would have made this series to the day they died if they could... Like, they just enjoy making the series so much, then it begins to kind of make sense. And my wife never had a problem with her outfits. She was,
I mean, my point is, it's not about whether someone has a problem. It's just like, why does it need to be there? What does it do can't? Because the scene that I'm referring to, which is in the, I think it's the first episode, is when they're both, it's like a montage cut together of them both getting ready for this date that they're going on.
Yeah.
And you see Chuck just kind of just, you know, picking out a shirt or something, She is in hot pants and a bra, basically.
It's so blatant.
Strapping weapons to her body.
Yeah, and it's so blatant. Mel, I have to say, I've just remembered a lot of changing scenes, and you get so much of Yvonne Strofsky in her pants.
Mm-hmm. And you do, we were not often rewarded with Zachary Levi shirtless. No, we had that occasionally, but not very often. But going back to that getting ready montage, which is, again, I mean, it's a classic trope to use. That's redundant. But anyway, that montage is classic. But if you think about it, what is Sarah doing in that scene? She's preparing for battle. That's what we're seeing. We're seeing her prepare her body for battle. She's a weapon.
Yeah.
Her entire body is a weapon. She's strapping weapons to herself, but she's also consciously, she knows that she can, and she's told her superior this already, I can get what I need from this guy because he is infatuated with me, because of how I look. And I'm going to use that. And that's our first example of, she's well aware of what she's doing.
That is kind of, even at this point, Matt, that is kind of the point, isn't it? That the way we will keep this guy in line is by him falling in love with me.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Yeah. And I can only assume that that blossoms into a real romance, but
who the hell knows, Matthew?
who the hell can possibly say?
Not comment on that speculation.
I think it just becomes...
It conforms to a growing trend in American TV shows, which is to have hot women fall in love with nerds.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, that's been going on since the mid-90s.
So that's been going on since Ghostbusters, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been going on since men were writing any sort of fiction whatsoever.
Yeah.
Since the writers.
But doesn't that sort of bother you a little bit, that it's just this thing that a man can get a beautiful woman regardless of who he is, but a woman has to be beautiful to find
a
place?
No, because that's not it. For Sarah, it's a business, it's a job, it's a professional thing where in the beginning, and then the more she comes to know Chuck, that's when she falls for him.
Yes, but doesn't it imply that she couldn't do that job if she wasn't beautiful?
She wouldn't.
She might not have been chosen for it.
Yeah, possibly not this mission. That could well be the case.
They would have picked someone else.
Yeah.
But that's
maybe
Melissa McCarthy.
I
think she's gorgeous.
But the thing is, this is probably true in the spy world, isn't it? Jamie, when you were MI6, they picked you for the missions for the best looking people, didn't they? Jamie? Yeah, he's gone to bed.
I'm afraid he's not.
No, you're probably right, actually, because have you ever seen that film Spy Game?
Spy Game, mm-hmm. Yeah.
With where Brad Pitt is recruited because of partly because of how he looks. I think they mentioned that in the film. You need to be charming and you need to be able to disarm people physically with your physical attributes.
And I will say this.
So I think there's a grain of truth in that, definitely.
Yeah, well, I do think that's kind of the point. And whilst Chuck never reaches, Tolstoy levels of depth, it does kind of wander around this world and the ethical world of spying and things like that. It gets into all of this somewhat as the seasons go on. And I think that's what attracted a lot of people to it, because it has so much more depth than it first appears, and yet it always remains to appear about as deep as it does at the moment. It's weird. Like, Timothy Dalton's in it, Matt. Timothy Dalton's in it.
No freaking way.
Freaking way.
Well, that's guaranteed. Linda Hamilton. Me in then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Linda Hamilton's in it. And they have significant roles.
I love Linda Hamilton.
There's one person in it that I really want to tell you. Shall we?
Go on, do it. I don't care about
what
spoilers.
What do you think, Mel?
Come on. It's been long enough now. I mean,
right, no, right. Scott Bakula.
Scott Bakula is
in it. Yeah. Oh.
There's so many good people in it who were drawn to it because they realised, I think, the point, if you like. And it is hard to say. Jamie, we lost you for a while there.
Yeah, signal went. I'm not going to lie as well. I've got to go to bed quite soon. So
don't lie, you went to
bed. Yeah, what is it, 8:30 there? Gosh. Yeah.
I'm working full time now. It's not easy, this normal life.
So listen,
I'm playing my tiny violin for you.
So look, we need to get Matt and Jamie to four episodes. We need to get you to the four. Matt hasn't got far to go. Jamie's averaging one episode a year for the last year.
Come on, you guys have to at least get to Wookiee. Because Chuck versus the Wookiee, I mean...
What episode is that?
You get Yvonne in the Princess Leia bikini.
Yes.
Can I entice you with that? Can I be...
Not Matt, obviously.
No, Matt doesn't care.
Hey, no. Hey, look, I enjoyed seeing her in those clothes,
yeah,
but...
You just wanted to protect her.
I'm just holding that out for the sisterhood.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
How about this?
What episode is that?
It's called Chuck versus the Wookiee.
No, but what
it's
number?
It's number four, isn't it? What have you guys watched?
Oh, great.
Matt's watched Pilot Helicopter, and then it's Tango, and... I'm pretty sure it's Wookiee. It's the Halloween episode.
Okay.
Oh, knowledge. Right.
Well, look, Jamie, don't go straight to number
cool,
four.
Cool,
I didn't
get
live
there.
With this
I
show for 5 years or anything.
Okay, Matt's going to get there. Jamie's going to... I don't know what Jamie's going to do. But please do it, Jamie.
He's going to jump ahead. He's going to jump ahead to episode four.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to do the next three episodes. I'm going to come back. Me and Matt are going to give our definitive opinion.
Okay, I've got a suggestion. This time next week, Mel... should be the one watching the first episode of something. Mel, what haven't you watched that everybody tells you to watch?
There's a list. Sopranos. Super
Oh my Gideon.
Right, start. You don't even need to go any further. Okay. Next week, Mel and the Sopranos unite for
Mel,
four episodes a set.
Do you think in 7 days, Mel, you could watch the first episode of The Sopranos for us?
I can give it my best shot.
How can you make that sound?
No, but guys, listen to how difficult this is for Mel.
I'm not good with violence, and I know there's a lot of violence in this show. So,
do you watch The Walking Dead, Mel?
No,
we've dealt with that.
Yeah, there's no violence in that.
Well, there's nowhere near as much violence in The Sopranos. And
okay.
There's plenty of violence in Chuck, but I suppose it's a bit more comic book, isn't it?
There's nothing funny about the
Soprano violence.
Okay, Mel, we think you can do it. Now, listen, guys. Listen to how difficult this is for Mel. Listen to the sacrifice she's making. And these aren't short episodes either. So you have got 1 week to get up to episode four. Of Chuck. Can you do
Consider
it?
Consider it done.
Okay. Matt?
Yeah, I'll do it.
Okay.
Yeah,
right.
All over it.
We'll regroup next week. Mel, we won't accept any excuses about your computer updating or anything like that.
This better be the end of it.
Thank you so much, everyone. That was good fun. And seriously, I there's lots of things that I recommend that people watch. And there's nothing that I've wanted more in my life than to be able to talk about Chuck with my friends and nobody will freaking watch it. So please get on with it. It's so good. Do you know what? Yes, it's thin on the ground sometimes, but I cried, I laughed, I cried again, and it's one of the best endings I've ever seen of any TV series. So get on it.
Amen.
Amen, sister. Take care, Mel. Take care, Matt. Thank you, and we'll speak to you next week.
Thank you all. Have a good one.
Bye. Email us
to pod.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.